You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
All right, everybody. What seems to be a guy who's maybe not on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast every single week, but I'm talking to you on the regular now between all of the different podcasts that I host, Mr. Ken Hess. Ken, how are we doing, dude?
I am doing great. I'm happy to be back, Dan.
Absolutely. So we've talked about your antelope hunt this year. We've had a hunting gear podcast that I completely forgot about that we launched. You've also killed a giant whitetail this year, and that's what we're going to talk about today. You live in Canada. If we go back to all of your past conversations that we've had, you live in an area of Alberta that, I mean, what would you say? You're within 4 hours of either direction of some of the greatest antelope, really good elk, some of the best mule deer, some of the best whitetails in the entire world, one some people might argue.
Yeah, moose hunting and bears and cougars. It was only 3 hours from the house. I shot my cougar about 4 years ago with my bow as well. So yeah, that was also a crazy adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. In your area, right, amongst your group of friends, like I live in Iowa, and by default, it's whitetails because I have nothing else to talk about in the state of Iowa. You know, we can talk about turkey and fishing a little bit, but you know, most people get real fired up about whitetails. In your group of friends, in your area where you live, what do people seem to get the most fired up about? What species?
My group of hunting friends and relatives, is the basis is whitetails. It always has been whitetails. And as opportunities arise or we get preference points, then we switch to mule deer, we switch to elk. Mm-hmm. But the basis is whitetails. We got their general tag we can use anywhere in the province. And that's kind of the basis for that one. If, like we've discussed before, if we get that bow zone tag and we have mm-hmm. permission in the bow zone, then we can get an extra tag starting on October 25th for another buck and a couple does. But basis is whitetails and always has been.
Yeah, dude. I'll tell you this. I really love the fact that, and this is what we talked about this earlier, that in the province of Alberta, there is no leasing of land. Leasing of land is illegal, right? And so what does that mean?
It means nobody gets preference over somebody else because you have money, unless you can buy the land and hunt on it that way, but you don't get any extra tags. If you have an abundance of land, there is a limit that you need for land. You do get a landowner's tag. Mm-hmm. I believe that's only for mule deer, and it only applies in certain areas. I don't know the breakdown of how that works, but you have to have quite a bit of land to qualify for a landowner tag. Yeah. But for the general public, you can't just pay an owner $1,500 or pay for his property taxes for the year and have access for that reason to his property. It needs to be fair across the board. We're not allowed to bait. We're not allowed to put out mineral licks. We're not allowed to do any of that. It's just let them do what they're supposed to do naturally. Apparently you're allowed to do food plots as long as it's growing and green on the ground. They have no rules against food plots, but as soon as you harvest it, put it in a bag and pour it in a pile on the ground, then that's where they have an issue. So I'm not sure where the breakdown is there, but
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Do you think that that keeps everything fair, or are there under the table dealings that happen?
I know for a fact there's under the table dealings, and it's hard. They're smart about it, and it's hard to break it out and make it public knowledge and get the right people to know about it. I don't get involved in it. I just go do my own thing and focus where everybody else focuses and get permission where I can get permission. And I know I'm going to be losing access to a spot this year. She's tired of dealing with all the hunters in the fall time here. So she's going to be selling one of her quarters. It's just a big quarter of bush. And she's going to end up selling that. So I'm going to have to try to get permission next season again from a new landowner. But I'm going to be losing 160 acres of permission this year. So
on whitetails?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whitetail moose.
Okay. That's crazy to me. For some reason in my head, I know my buddy Lucas up in North Dakota has hunts in some areas where he's been in a tree stand deer hunting and a moose has walked by. But I can't imagine a moose walking by my tree stand while I'm whitetail hunting.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Does it happen a lot?
It can, yeah. It depends where you're at. So like my whitetail setups are pretty set up specific for whitetails. They're not really where the moose are going to be. More in the rut when I start moving into the bush and getting kind of into the cover, then you can start intertwining with the moose. But right now, kind of where I've been set up out on field edges, unless there's something in the area that's passing through, it hasn't happened in a while. But yeah, I have had it in the rut, or in November you go and you sit and you hear this big crash coming behind you, a big 50-inch bull steps over your shoulder. it's pretty fun. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, today we're going to have a quick conversation, fairly quick. I mean, we're going to get into the details about this point on the wall behind you to the deer you shot this year. That one. Okay. Absolute giant. You know, guys dream about shit like that. Before we get into that topic of conversations, I'm going to send a huge shout out to all of the partners here at the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. First and foremost, we have Wasp Archery. I just got a message from one of the guys who works at Wasp, and that my discount code that I am giving out on my podcast is number one in all of the discount codes that they put out for other podcasts and influencers and all the other media guys. So I'm going to pat myself on the back real quick, and I'm also going to say thank you to everybody who has used the discount code to purchase Wasp broadheads. First and foremost, I love them because it is manufactured in the United States of America. They have a complete lineup of fixed blade and mechanical blade broadheads, and they're a badass head made from some badass material. I said this in years past, like when I think of a Wasp broadhead, I think of Metallica just going to town on a song, headbanging, like not newer Metallica, but like Justice for All Metallica, Ride the Lightning Metallica, where they're just like, that's the kind of shit I think about when I think about Wasp. So wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Real quick, Ken. Are
like Americans, we're pretty proud of products that are made in America. Is that the same way in Canada? Like, do you guys get fired up about Canadian made products?
Absolutely. We don't have as much variation as you guys have. I do like to buy American products too when I have the opportunity. We just get clobbered coming across the border right now.
Yeah, dude.
And it makes it a little bit more difficult. So I've slowed down on my purchasing quite a bit, but
yeah, even on my, let's say like my international orders for Full Sneak, when I'm sending something to, I don't know, as far away as Southern California, I think I sent one to San Diego one time to a guy who was on a naval base there, and it was further away and the shipping was cheaper than it was sending a couple t-shirts to a guy in Saskatchewan, I believe it was. And so Saskatchewan might be equally as far away. It wasn't Saskatchewan. It wasn't Alberta. What's the next one to the east? Quebec?
Manitoba.
Yeah, it was in Manitoba. And he had to pay like double the price of the t-shirt. And I'm just like, that's ridiculous. So no one wants to buy stuff.
And then he would have got a bill as soon as it got delivered to his house for customs. So that'd be an extra on top of that shipping.
Yeah, exactly. So not fun. Anyway, still, Wasp Archeries is the best broadhead on the market, in my opinion. Okay, vortexoptics.com. Next week or this week, I think it's this week, I am going to be dropping a conversation with Mark Boardman from Vortex Optics about my experience with the new Ranger HD 3000 range finding binoculars and my normal Ranger 3000 rangefinder, and how I used them when I was out west, and like what I like about it, what I didn't like about it, like just kind of having a conversation of when do you use them, how do you use them, that kind of stuff. And so that'll be pretty interesting. That should drop Friday of this week, which this episode won't launch till next week. So it will be, when I talk about it now, I'm saying go check the last episode of the Hunting Gear podcast that was dropped. Okay. Vortexoptics.com. Go take a look at them. Next on the list, Code Blue Sense. Boom. The last time we talked, I was telling you my Mox grapes were just dead. They have awakened. And my Reveal trail cameras are sending me the pictures of all the deer that are visiting my Rope-A-Dope Mox Grape Kit by Code Blue Sense. So go check out CodeBlueSense.com. Check out their lineup of real and synthetic deer urines. Go check out their scent elimination products, their Rope-A-Dope Mox Grape Kit. They got everything. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. CodeBlueSense.com. Last, Reveal trail cameras. There is still time to get a Reveal trail camera, get it out on your hunting property, and start getting intel sent directly to your phone of what deer are on your farms. I mean, I live a busy lifestyle, and I am the guy who I want to know as much about the properties, whether it's people trespassing, whether it's deer moving, whether it's I know now because of a Reveal trail camera that the crops are out on the farm that I hunt. So that means I can now get in there and start hitting it hard because the deer are going to be in the timber now. And that changes from a strategy standpoint too. So go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new Ultra from Reveal. All right, Ken. I want to talk a little bit about, because I think we talked about this at the beginning of this summer when we started having these conversations. Your deer are extremely nocturnal and don't move very much in the summer and September timeframe. Is that correct?
No, they don't move very much. They don't have to. They're kind of they've positioned themselves very, educationally, so they have food, water, and bedding all within 20 or 30 acres. Until the rut hits, they don't start traveling. I've got cameras on many of the surrounding properties, and they are always within the same swamp bottom. Willow Bluff, and then they come out to the same field to feed. I did find out where they're hanging out in like late summer, which is one quarter section away, 1 mile to the north. So I got a bunch of photos there in velvet. And then kind of as soon as the food switched, they moved back to their home range where they will stay all winter, where they will basically shed their antlers and they'll restart the whole cycle over again.
Okay. So talk to me a little bit about the terrain that these whitetails are living in.
It's challenging because there's not a lot of different terrain. It's very flat. And then you have just standard agricultural field. The one field that I do like to hunt on, I actually have permission to go in from the backside property and put my tree stand in the trees that are on the other property and shoot over the fence onto the permission that I have on the open field, because there is no trees on the field that the deer come to. So the years past, I have been hunting by sitting in the grass edge along the fence line, put your back up against the fence post, sit on the ground. Visibility is always limited when you do that, because when you're on the ground, 2 feet of terrain change, you end up losing visibility across the entire field. So, and I think they were seeing me walking in from that side last year, because I would sit in many different spots and try to move back and forth, kind of depending which way the wind was going, where I seen them last. And they would always come out somewhere different from where I was. And they always seemed to know where I was, because they would look up in my direction and watch. And then they would put their head back down to keep feeding, but they would never work their way over to me. I almost got quite a long shot last year, but it was like right at last light. He knew I was there the whole time. Somehow, I know he couldn't smell me, but he knew I was there. So I don't know if they saw me coming across the field last year. But the big change I made this year was my access route. I started coming in from that other property and they had no idea I was there.
Yeah. I want to stick with terrain here for a second. Now, you say flat, okay? So it is, and there's not a lot of trees. Are we talking like grasslands with the trees just in the fence rows and maybe some creek bottoms, or
it's semi hilly, semi flat. Like the hills aren't very big. Mm-hmm. It's very standard agricultural like farmland. So
this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo, shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
The pea field that I'm hunting on, and then the field behind, is just for hay. Where the deer are coming from is like pastures. So there's some grass and then water and swamp bottoms and willows and trees. So it's all kind of mixed in there. But it's not native grasses or nothing. It's, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I don't know where you hunt, but yeah, it's very similar to what I see when the guys are hunting on TV and they're hunting like the edge of corn, but then the other field is just a wheat field or whatever. It's very, very similar to standard whitetail country.
Yep. And I'm going to pull up Google. Let's see. How far are you from Edmonton?
About 40 minutes east.
Okay. 40 minutes east. Okay. So I'm going to just zoom in on a rain. Okay. Now I'm starting to see the basically just straight up agriculture. And it looks like you guys have, it's almost like someone tenderized the ground with someone tenderized the ground with ponds and lakes and little wetlands.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Yeah, it's very dry this year, so lots of those are going to be dried up. But I'm kind of like right on the edge of where it switches to agriculture, and then you go the other direction, and then you got big bush country. So they kind of go back and forth in that and in and out of the cover as they get pressure and we move into the rifle season here. They'll move into that big bush country quite fast after they hear the first couple shots on rifle season.
Gotcha. Okay, so they don't move very much. They're very nocturnal. They sit on their butts. They may not be nocturnal. They just don't move a lot during the summer months leading into September, correct?
Yeah. And where they live, I don't have access to hunt their bedding area because it's not on a property that I will ever be able to get permission. He doesn't allow hunting. He doesn't allow anybody in there for any reason. He won't even let me walk around and pick up antlers shit for shed hunting.
Gotcha. All right. So just access then. Right? Just access. Yeah. He allows you. Okay. All right. So you throw your trail cameras out. And you shot your deer this year in October. All right.
September 24th.
September 24th, you said?
Yes.
September 24th. Okay. What were the key indicators that was like, okay, now I need to get out and start hunting this deer? Was it the first time out for this buck? Like, walk us through what made you say, okay, I got to get out tonight.
I hunted a couple times before that. The one time I did hunt was basically the first time out for the season. It was semi early, kind of in between my antelope hunts. I wasn't really looking to hunt per se for the night, but I went out. I set up my saddle, I got my sticks up, I got my platform up, got my rope all set in the tree, trimmed a few branches. It was a little bit of a windier day, so I could get away with making a little bit more noise. Wanted to check out the spot, make sure the spot was going to work. The tree was a little bit smaller than I liked, so it was a little bit wobbly when you got up to the top, but it worked. It was good enough for what I needed. I wasn't super high. So the first time was just that. I sat probably two more times after that on nice calm days. Wind was good.
Did you know this buck and other bucks were in there because of trail camera data?
Yeah, I've had pictures of him for over the last like 13, 14 months. So kind of late last September, I got permission on this property and put cameras out. And then I've had pictures of him since then all the way up until now, of course. And I've got tons and tons of photos. I see all the times a day where he likes to move, and he does not like to move during the day. I think in January, I got two videos of him during the day on the other side of the highway, which is where I ended up finding half of his antler broke off in the spring that he broke off last year.
Okay.
But 99% of the time he stays in this field and he comes out at night or in the last 5 minutes.
Okay.
So I did hunt. The time I hunted before I killed him, it was probably a 35, 40 mile an hour windy day, super, super windy. I got up in the saddle and I was not a fan of how much everything was shaking and moving around. So I ended up getting down and just standing at the base of the tree until it got dark. So about an hour, 45 minutes, I stood at the base of the tree, almost worked out perfectly. Three does came running out into the field right in front of me. I thought he was going to be right behind him, and he wasn't.
Yeah.
So that was, it was good. They came out. Everything worked out perfect. The does went past and moved on. Had no idea I was there.
Yeah.
So I kind of let the area relax for like another week and just watched the trail cam photos. And then the night before I went out, they came out like 15 minutes early.
Okay. And that was through trail camera data, right?
Through trail camera data, yeah. They came out like 15 minutes before dark. They were both out there. There's two big bucks. The other one's a big 5x4, probably about 180 inches this year. So they came out, a couple does, there's a couple smaller bucks with them. So everybody was out early.
Yeah.
So I just kept that in the back of my mind. I didn't really want to make a move yet. So the next day I was just like watching my trail cameras during the day, nothing really happening. And then I saw a frost advisory pop up on my phone. So it was going to get down to freezing temperatures that night. So me and my wife were actually out with the kids, had fish and chips in town. I had 45 minutes to sit in my stand, maybe an hour in my stand. By the time I got home, I said, I'm going to go out and just, I'm going to sit tonight.
Okay.
And thankfully she is good enough that she doesn't even question.
Okay. Now hang on a second. It's September, right? So we know that the whitetails aren't chasing deer. They're not doing much yet, right? The velvet is off, correct? On this buck, the velvet was off. He was very like borderline nocturnal. And if you were getting pictures of him, it was just like 5-10 minutes of shooting light left, correct?
Yeah. And he's always been like that. Both of those deer have always been like that.
Yeah.
I have never had a picture of either of them midday, unless it was like June or August, when full velvet, they're up middle of the day walking around feeding. But as soon as September, late August, like they go completely underground and they stay there.
Okay. So I want you to walk us through, because you've hunted, how many years have you hunted this property?
Two now.
Okay. So what have you observed on this particular property from last year and this year about their bed to food pattern? And has it been ultra consistent down to almost the trail?
They have very favorite spots where they come out of the bedding area.
Yeah.
But again, it's super challenging because they come out like at last light and you've got 5 minutes to make something happen or it's not going to happen. Last year when I got the other big one with my rifle here, it was actually an hour and a half before the end that they ended up coming out. But I've discovered that during the rut, this is very much a pass-through property. And because it's so far off the highway and there's no real pressure around, they will run the back fence line between properties and between big chunks of bush. And then they will go and do their doe checking and do loops and move back and forth. And they kind of do that during the day. That one I got last year, I didn't know I got a picture of him early, but he ran across the field at 10 o'clock in the morning. We were out of the field by 9:30. Mistake on our part. We should have stayed. And I know that big bucks like to move during the day. Once the morning pressure beds down, they want all the does to bed down. And then they go start checking all the bedding areas. And I don't know why we didn't stay out that day. It was a little bit cold. We went and got some food. I got a trail cam photo. We knew there was a buck there. So we went back in the afternoon and sat. And he ended up moving probably about 2 hours. Hour and a half before legal light ended. That was last year. And that's the same field that this guy came from.
Yeah.
So
you have a pocket, right? You got little bit of what I would call a honey hole. You got a pocket that it not only does it have giant whitetails in it, but it has everything a whitetail needs, a great age class. And it seems like you have a sex ratio and an age structure where you're taking the top dog. You've taken the top dog last year. You took one of the two top dogs this year. And then now it's just a matter of time waiting for next year to pop up. So the other one that you talked about last year, or that is walking around there still, are you still getting camera pictures of that buck?
He made me nervous for about 4 days there. I didn't get a picture. And now he was finally out last night and the night before. But I'm hoping and crossing my fingers that he survives this season, because next season he'll be very, if he doesn't break 200, he'll be very, very close.
Yeah. Man. So are is there a lot of deer there? Are you passing several young deer every year? Or when I say young deer, I mean less desirable deer than the top tier of what you have on that farm?
Yeah, there's lots. There's a bunch of forkies out there. There's little 3x3s and like 4-point basket racks. They're not outside their ears yet. Some of them got longer tines, but they don't have that mass that is filled out yet. They're not mature. They're young. They're always out there sparring, and they're farting around. And then one of these big guys will come out. The one I shot this year, I've never seen him spar. I think he was old. So I have sent his teeth in to find out actually how old he was. But the big guy that's still out there, I always see him sparring with the younger guys and pushing them back and forth. Nothing gets too exciting, but it's definitely cool to watch and see the size difference in their body between probably a 5-year-old buck versus a little 2.5 or 3-year-old buck.
Yeah. Yeah. And so from a hunter standpoint, a hunter like hunting pressure, are you the only guy who gets to hunt this little piece, or are there other hunters on the surrounding properties that know about this, that get to hunt this, or is this kind of like top secret?
This is basically top secret. It's me, my cousin, my wife, kind of just like my family who we want to take into that area. I don't take many people into there because I don't want to push problem is if we take too many people in there too often, then we push the deer off and then they start venturing onto other properties and they don't come back.
Yep. So not only
there is some surrounding hunting pressure, and then we do suffer from the road hunter range in November where I don't know if you guys have that down there as well, but the guys will just drive around in their trucks, and if there is a big deer in the field, they will shoot it with their rifle and they will load it up and get the hell out of Dodge, and no permission, nothing. They just shoot and run.
Yeah. It's that everywhere. We have, I talked to one of the conservation officers that I used to live by, and he's like, one of the roads that I used to live by and my parents live on is one of the most highly poached roads that he knows of, because there's all these fingers that lead up to the road, and they just at night, 2:30 in the morning. And he's like, usually what happens is it correlates with bar closing time, which is 2 a.m. in Iowa. So guys will get in there after they've been at the bar, they get in their trucks with their rifles, and they'll just cruise the roads on their way back to wherever they're going. Maybe they take the long way, pop, pop out the window. And that's usually when they'll get busted.
Yeah, it's really, really unfortunate. And there's too many of them that don't get caught. Mm-hmm.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
You did, however, reignite my hope that my big target buck from last year maybe is going to come back this year, because you said you had a big deer last year that went missing and he just showed back up on trail cam. So I'm hoping mine that went missing November 1st last year, I'm hoping he'll be back this fall. Maybe we bumped him and he moved off and has just stayed somewhere else, and I don't know about it, but I didn't find his sheds and I didn't find his deadhead anywhere, and I looked absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he is still out there and makes his rounds again, but I'll keep you posted on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So what the cool part is, okay, you have identified that you have a honey hole. And I think what happens is sometimes guys they find a honey hole, they get ultra excited, and then they just blow their load way too early in this honey hole. And what I mean by that is they'll go in hard and fast, and they'll continuously go in there and just ruin it. It sounds like you've established that.
I did that last year. That's why I was not successful last year, really.
Okay. So you went in and you're like, oh my God, were you afraid that they were eventually going to move out of the area as the breeding season happened?
Yes. And they always will. There's nothing you can really do about that.
But there's does there so, though. There's, it's not yeah, like a pocket always, of just bucks.
Well, there's only so many does, right? Like I haven't shot any does on that property, and I'm not interested in it, because the most I've seen out in the field is like 5 or maybe 8 does at a time. but I'm not seeing an over constant abundance of does. It's the same doe and her two fawns, or the same two does and their three fawns together. And they just, it's just these couple little pockets. There's not an overabundance in this location because there's not enough, tree area or bedding area to support more deer than that. So what you start getting into the big bush country or some other pockets, there are more pockets of does. I kind of know where they are, but the bucks definitely don't stay there. I try to keep it so they are not pressure, and then they move at night instead of moving during the day. But like, nobody went missing last year other than the ones that I knew about.
Okay, cool. Well, and then so this year you kind of realized, hey, I put too much pressure on this property. I need to just get the cell cams out, do my evaluations, lay off the property as much as possible, and just kind of relax a little bit.
Yeah, I only hunted for whitetail five times this year. I sat in that stand, and number five is when you walked out.
Yeah. And honestly as possible, did cellular trail cameras play a huge part in harvesting this deer?
100%. Because then I knew which side of the field he was favoring, or where he liked and preferred to come out, where he was coming out earlier than where he was coming out later. So I got a ton of photos of him on the other camera, but they were always at 10:30 at night or 1 o'clock in the morning. And they would be just standing on the fence line and feeding, and they would hang out there. Just like all three bucks, they would hang out in this little 20-yard circle in front of the camera, no problem. But it was always in the middle of the night. So I kept moving them like two fence posts at a time and just trying to figure out where in the field they preferred to come out and hang out. And I finally kind of figured it out to where they're favoring. So I tried to focus on that area.
Yep. Perfect. Well, I'll tell you what, man, I am, I want to know this question before I want to try to split you into two different people. I want to talk to the Ken that is pre cell cam and the Ken that is current cell cam. Okay. How do you feel? Cause I don't even know about myself yet. I'm still trying to figure all of this out, like make the decisions about like, cause I rely heavy on cell cam data. My cellular trail cameras don't allow me, because of how far I am away from them, don't allow me to make real time decisions. It's always delayed because of my schedule. Now I could get if I wanted to drive 3 hours, you know, drive an hour and a half and try to make a move off something like that. But how do you feel about cellular trail cameras being a big part of identifying this deer's movement and then ultimately getting a shot at him because of that?
I've never got a trail cam photo immediately that resulted me in shooting that deer that day. So I have been on the property walking in the morning, and I got a trail cam photo of a deer, like a good deer on one side of the field, and I was on the other. It let me know that he was there, so I didn't continue to my path. I kind of stopped where I was and watched to see if he was still going to be there at legal light, and he wasn't. But even if I would have moved to my spot, I probably still would have known he was in that field anyways. So I try not to hunt mornings, because mornings I find wreck everything. The deer are all out in the field. I got no way to access the field while they're out there. I just end up spooking them back into the timber anyways. I'd rather let them go back into the timber. I'd rather walk in at an hour after legal and be able to peek over the hill and see that they're there than blow them out in the dark. Mm-hmm. But when the deer are out in the evening, I should be set up and ready for hunting before they come out anyways. And when I'm there, I'm not going to switch what I'm doing because I get a trail cam photo of him on the other side of the field. I've never done that. I don't feel the need to do that. I should be set up well enough that I know where they're going to come out, and I'm going to stick with that. And hopefully they move to me in time. And if they don't, then I'll move to that area the next day. But I've never gotten a picture while I'm sitting at home and know that he's out in the field and go boogie over there and try to make a move on him. It's just, there's never enough time for that. I am close enough for that. It's just like with schedule and everything else, it doesn't work. You're more likely to mess it up than you are to be successful. So I'd rather just take that intel, keep that intel in the back of my brain and use it for the next night, or watch the wind direction for similar weather, similar wind, and try to hunt based on previous data. And hopefully he repeats that.
Yep. I like that. Okay. Let's talk about the day you kill him. I want you to start from when you identified that you had the right conditions to go in, and then all the way to drawing your bow back.
We were in town for swimming lessons for the kids. I wasn't even fully at all planning on hunting that day. It was a cooler day, whatever. So I wasn't in a rush to get out of there. We did the swimming lessons. We went out for supper, took our time at supper. We're not rushing out of there again, because I said I'm just not interested in hunting that night anyways. Spending time with the kids and the family. Got out of supper. We're on the way home, or at supper. I can't remember when I noticed that there was going to be a frost advisory. So I kind of just had that in the back of my mind. Wasn't really paying attention to the time at all. Ended up getting home, and the kids were doing great. They're actually listening to mom that night. So I said, I'm going to go out. There's a frost advisory. I'm going to see, this is kind of our first cold snap, I'm going to say. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to sit for the last hour, 45 minutes, and see if something happens. She said, no problem. Have fun. Good luck. So I left. She dealt with the kids, not even a question. And I thank her greatly for it every time she allows. So I had an hour, I got dressed, got to my spot, walked across. As I said earlier, I changed my access. So I went in from that backside, snuck into my tree stand. There was almost no wind, but the wind that was there was dominant and in my face, coming out of the bedding area, blowing into the field behind me where I know they never, ever go. It's a turned over field. It's just dirt and weeds. There's nothing in there for them. So it was perfect that way. Got in my stand, got all set up. It was 45 minutes before the end, answering emails on my phone, kind of just doing some work stuff like I normally do when I get in the stand earlier, but I don't know why I was, but I wasn't focused on what was going on. I ended up putting my phone away probably 20 minutes before the end and just like sat and listened and watched. And I finally caught some movement on my left, just on the other side of the fence line coming out of the trees. And it was one of the smaller bucks. And he's one of the bucks that's part of the group that kind of comes out with the big guys quite often, but not all the time. He might be out all the time, just not within cell cam range. So like, I was kind of watching him. And then as soon as he put his head down, I seen my target buck right behind him with his head up. And then they were all coming single file for the fence line. So I got my bow and I got ready. I got the little attachment for my my tethered saddle so I can put my bow cam kind of on my hip and have it sit there and ready so I don't have to reach for it when they're in sight range. Mm-hmm. So I got that down, got it all ready. Got my rangefinder ready. I'm watching them trying to switch between rangefinder and binoculars, but I got a big bush that I can't see through. I got a little gap where I can see the fence line, and then there's a big dead spot before they get to the feeding area in front of me. So I'm trying to watch through that because they
jumped. How far is he at this point?
150 yards.
Okay. All right.
So I seen them jump the fence line, and then they're in that big dead spot. So I don't know where they are. So I'm trying to slowly lean back and forth to try and see around this dead spot or see.
And
through
you're
it.
In, are you in a tree stand or a saddle at this point?
Yeah, I'm in my saddle.
Okay.
So trying to look through this dead spot to find out where they are and what direction they're facing, see if they're even looking at me, or try to figure out what they're doing and where they're going, because my time is running out. I've got 15 minutes left by time the night's going to be over. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to judge whether they're going to be in my shooting lane by then or not, because they'll just feed their way across the field. There's no rush to get to where I'm at. There's nothing bringing them there specifically. They just like to go over that hill by the end of the night in front of that trail camera, and they're just kind of out of sight from the road. So I think that's why they favor that spot. So I see the big deer, like the big, big one, comes out first into my sight range, but he's like 85 yards and head down, just like slowly feeding to my right. And then all of a sudden, the 4x4 comes running past him, and then he gets over that hill and he stops dead and puts his head down and starts feeding. So I ranged him at 50 yards. I set my pin for like 53 because I seen the direction that he was walking. So by the time I drew back and settled and got my eyes adjusted, because the sun was setting behind him and I had like 5 minutes left, so it was not great sight conditions, but I still had time, drew back, released the arrow, and I heard the hit.
So you dropped a 53-yard bomb on this buck?
Yeah, I did.
Holy shit, dude. Out of a saddle?
Yeah, it's the saddle's the most comfortable thing I've ever shot my bow out of.
My God, dude. I don't even have a tree stand currently set up or a place that I even hunt that would allow me a 53-yard shot. That blows my mind. Out of a saddle. Okay. Congratulations.
Thank
congratulations.
You. Congratulations. I try to shoot 50 and 60 yards regularly in my yard at home, so it doesn't feel that bad. I shoot out to 70 yards for practice just to keep those other ones feeling like they're good. I hardly never shoot 20, 30 yards. 40 yards, I'll shoot semi-regular, but I really try to shoot 50 as my staple. Mm-hmm. Just because of where I have to hunt, it's very, very hard to get them within that 20, 30 yards. I'd love a 20-yard shot. Yeah. I'd never get that.
Yeah. Yeah, that blows my mind, dude. Dude, that blows my mind. A 53-yard bomb out of a saddle. Okay. Congratulations. All right. So you heard the smack.
I heard the hit.
And then what happened?
My stomach sunk a little bit because this is my first year not shooting with the nocturnal lighted nocks. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea where I hit him.
Okay.
I couldn't see the arrow because the sun is setting behind him, that side of his body is dark. So I can't see the arrow in him. He didn't react really well. He just ran off into the field directly away, but he only went like 20 yards and then he turned and went straight out into the field. And then he stopped another 20 yards after that. And then he did the wobble and he fell. And then I got nervous again because he stood back up and just like stood there. And I wasn't really sure what was going on. I didn't know if it was a gut shot. And then he fell over right in those same tracks again. So it was a perfect shot. He was just a very old, very tough deer. It was a perfect double lung. And I don't know how he had the energy to fall and manage to get back up on all four legs and stand there again. But he did. But that was the last time.
Dude, you're a slayer. You know that? I've gotten to know you. I'm going to put you in the slayer category because it's like every story I've heard from you or you tell me, you just walk away. You walk away with what you're going after. Right. And a lot of guys, I can't say that about them. I mean, even myself. I don't even know if I'm in slayer category yet, but I was like certain guys, they just walk out and they get the job done. And it sounds like through strategy and then practicing, you know, shooting your bow, you are now slayer, you're slayer category, if that makes sense.
It's taken a long time and it's taken a lot of changes over the last couple of years to try to get to the point where I think I'll never fully figure it out. Nobody ever does, but I've figured it out enough that I can be successful often enough that it keeps me going back and wanting more. So it's like the big puzzle of the deer hunting world, and just try to piece it together and fit yourself in where it's supposed to fit and don't overreact. Don't try to force something that's not natural. Let those deer do their natural thing. Let them come to you. Like this year, I don't even know if I'm going to grunt and rattle when I take out my niece or I take my wife out hunting later this year. Just going to kind of let them watch what they do on trail cameras and just try to let them do that again. Unless they're standing out there at 300 yards and it's a little bit too far of a shot, and I want to suck them in that extra 50 or 75 yards for the shot for somebody else, I think I'm just going to let them do their own thing and just not let them know that I'm there. Just go in, be there, and then they can just move how they want to move.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you score that buck?
I did, and I gross scored him out to 166 on a 4x4.
I don't know if I like you. Dude, I don't even know if I like you anymore, dude. That is a gigantic 8-pointer. Dude, that's a giant 160-inch, 66-inch 8-pointer. I had one buck about that size, maybe a little bit bigger. I ran into him November 4th, I believe it was. It was 80 degrees outside that day. And me and the guy who was filming me at the time, we're just like, dude, I don't even want to go out because we were just sweating. It was uncomfortable. I had to do a run and gun on this ridge and I was just like, screw it, let's do it. And this was before cell cams, and I set up and this guy came right out of the bottom. And if I would have been one tree over, because I was sitting and deciding, do I want to go here or do I want to go here? And that buck would have showed up and I would have been able to put an arrow in him. But I watched him get way downwind of me. And I watched him get downwind to me, and he just was like, he put his nose up. I had an Ozonics in the tree. He couldn't, and I just watched his head turn back and forth with this. I'm going to go 165 to 170 inch 8-point rack. He was killed that same year during muzzleloader season, but he was a giant by another guy. Anyway, I like gigantic 8-point bucks. So
crazy eights, man.
Crazy eights. That's right. Well, dude, congratulations. Thanks for the story. Hopefully this gets all the listeners fired up for the upcoming season, whether you're chasing a basket rack, you're chasing a basket rack eight, or you're chasing a 200 incher and everything in between, or dude, like the conversation I just had last week with a guy, he doesn't give a shit about filling his, and unless it's filling his freezer, that's his trophy, is opening the freezer door. So Ken, I'm sure we'll be on again. Thank you very much. Coming semi-live from Canada. Good vibes, Ken. Thanks to you for taking time out of your day. Thanks to all the listeners. If you guys could do me a huge favor, go to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you download the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. Give me a 5-star review. Let everybody know that this podcast is worth it. I'd appreciate it. Good vibes, and we'll talk to you next time.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.